I just love this group, the Blind Boys of Alabama, with Jesus Gonna Be Here. This group was formed at the Alabama Institute for the Negro Blind in Talladega, Alabama, in 1939, and still going strong. The song is from their May 13th, 2016 album titled Spirit of the Century. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. Glad to be with you. Glad you're with me today on the anniversary of the big upheaval in Washington, D.C., and nobody is saying what it was. It's an amazing thing. The whole nation is gripped in conversation about this, but nobody's calling it what it is. What is it? Everybody has a different name for it, but I would like somebody to have a name for it. President Biden today, in recognizing the anniversary, said that, you know, it was an unfortunate thing. And basically, he summed it up by saying, it all happened because Trump couldn't bear the thought that he lost the election to Joe Biden. Well, that is, you know, when you think about it, these are grown men. And this is the best, the most complex analysis we can get from the president, that Biden was miffed that he lost the election and, you know, he had a fit. And therefore, he encouraged people to destroy the country in retaliation. And such people decided to take him up on that and, you know, descend on the nation's capital and try to tear it apart. I have thoughts about this, but I'm not going to say them just yet. I'd much prefer to hear what you have to say 1 year from the conflagration, what you think of it, or what you thought of it then. What was that? Is it as simple as, well, Donald Trump couldn't stand losing the election, and so if I can't have it, then nobody should, not even the duly elected president, newly elected president at that, and I'm going to just smash everything up and have my people show you what kind of power I have, and we're going to just smash everything up, you know, real good American style. Yeah, this was a very American response, a response from a president who for years now, this is not something I just made up yesterday, for years, I've been talking about Donald Trump's psychological deficits and that the nation would be imperiled because if he should be president, basically he'll make a mess of everything. He's unpredictable. He's not particularly knowledgeable. He's not well-educated. He's a dangerous person to have as a leader. He is quite insufficient in many categories. And yet, you know, we haven't seen articles yet deciphering Donald Trump's psychological aspects. We just have never seen that. They continue to cover Donald Trump as if he is, quote, normal, unquote, when nothing is further from the truth. Have your thoughts, especially as you look at what's happening now and you regress a little bit and you see how it compares to what happened then. And any other thoughts that you think are relevant. 888-874-4888. What happened on that day a year ago when the nation saw an unspeakable act being aided and abetted and encouraged by a president who lost re-election? It was quite an experience for the whole country, but not the whole country is interested in plumbing the depths of this question and the reaction as well. There are many people in Congress who just wouldn't talk about it. It's almost like it's an act of sedition in and of itself to talk about it. So we should just shut up and make it go away. But I would welcome your thoughts, 888-874-4888. What do you see now with a year's distance from the event? What do you make of the assault on Congress by troops motivated by and encouraged by Donald Trump to strike at Congress? President Carter had just had an opinion piece printed, and he likened it to perhaps one of the most serious breaches of democratic order in the United States history. People are looking back now and saying all the things that they should have said and could have said so that we could have had warnings. But nobody said anything to warn us, really, because it was considered bad form. You don't attack a president. You don't criticize a president. And I understand, especially as a former president, you don't want to be caught in that trap. But that, too, was a duty to warn. And so we should have heard from previous presidents what was to come or what they expected to happen to warn the nation that it should be on alert. Because a person of unpredictable mind was now occupying the White House. All right. No calls yet. 888-874-4888. And on that note, I want to mention that there are some names I'm going to call, and these names are not the end of the list by any means, but these are names that I've culled so far from presentations that have been made, and I would be interested in inviting them to make their presentations on air very soon, but we have to have a little conference. So I do not, and the engineer does not, retain people's numbers when they call. So I basically ask your indulgence, whose names I call today, to certainly call and let it be known that you have called and leave a number with the engineer. Okay, that would be very helpful. Jeremiah, Patricia, Ed, Brother David from Brooklyn, Gwen, Steve, Henry, Wayne, Muhammad, and Jackie. When you call in, just leave your name and a number where you can be reached. I will be the one trying to reach you. Okay, so let's get on with our program today on the anniversary of the great misbehavior in Washington, D.C. And people would rather us believe that that was a fantastic maneuver and a sign that people are serious and they are ready for war. Oh, geez. Ed from Queens, I just called your name.
Yes, and thank you. How are you doing, Yatrice?
Okay, how are you?
I'm all right. I look forward to it. Pertaining to the topic that we're talking about today or that you had put forward, it was an act of sedition. It was an act of treason fostered by and fomented by a madman. And it appealed to the baser nature of this country. It appealed to racism. It appealed to sexism. It appealed to fascist hierarchy. And there's a large segment of this country that still believes that the election was a fraud, that still believes that it was stolen from this guy, and that will follow him to the grave. And that's what alarms me the most. And he is the actual head of the GOP, as far as I'm concerned, because they don't have anyone with any morals or any fortitude to stand against him. So he controls, whether you want to call this a monster with two heads or whether you want to call it Democratic Republican Party, whatever it is, he controls half of it to this day. And there's not only the vocal masses that will outwardly support him, which have increased substantially since his presidency, there are those unspoken masses that will smile in your face and say, yeah, we're against him, but when it comes time for the rubber to meet the road, they're going to vote for him because they believe in part, if not all of his views, openly or repressed. There's a fear in this country. There's always been a fear in this country of the African-American, of being replaced. We heard it at the tiki torches and all that, the chant of replace. When we won't be replaced, we won't be replaced. And it's becoming a reality. There's going to be a shift in the world. There are more dark-skinned people than there are light-skinned people. Birth rates are declining in Europe and America, and they're increasing in Africa and Malaysia and India. And that fear, I believe, is a driving force in what Trump takes advantage of. And that was the driving force behind January the 6th a year ago. They thought they were patriots. They thought they were Thomas Paine and Thomas Jefferson. They thought they were doing patriotic work.
As far as you were concerned, what was the most important message to get from the assault on Congress last year?
That if we're not careful, if you want to call it a democracy or representative democracy, if we're not careful, we'll lose it all. To what was thought was a small segment of the population, to what is apparently becoming, even from FBI reports, even from just looking at the news and looking at the actions around this country, a large segment of the population that share his views, that share sentiments that equate with his logic, and in a moment it could all flip, especially now that America is in the decline. Because this is if you look back at history, these are times. Germany was in a great decline when Hitler rose to power. Certain Bolshevik countries, when they were in decline, Soviet countries, Stalin rose to power. You've got to be careful. People like an easy solution. And the easy solution is to point at a victim, is to point at a group or a class of people and blame them for your ills or your lack of preparedness or your lack of forethought. And violence is the American way.
Well, thank you for getting us started today with some very provocative thoughts. And do call 888-874-4888 and leave a phone number with the engineer. Thank you. Neil from Connecticut, you're on the air. Hello, Neil.
Hi. Neil here.
Hello.
Yes. Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Well, so far, it's taken a while to take off. What's up?
I'd like to pose a question. Well, first of all, thank you for the intro song.
You're welcome.
Where is the religious left? I'm wondering. And the question comes from the assumption that most of the people who raided the Capitol would claim to be on the religious right. I would claim that they're largely a group of haters. So many of them were descended from so-called Christian families, call themselves Christians. So I'd like to remind the listeners that Jesus drove the money changers and the sellers of sacrificial animals out of the temple with a whip. I'll point out that Peter, one of his disciples, had a sword, which he used a few days later when the soldiers came for his master in the Garden of Gethsemane. Weapons, handguns and other weapons were, and Molotov cocktails were brought to the Capitol insurrection. So I'd like to point out that I don't feel that many of these people really were Christians at all. Jesus drove them out with a whip. He could have used Peter's sword. He could have killed some of the money changers. But he was making a point, and murder was not on his mind. But I believe murder was on the mind of a lot of the insurrectionists.
Okay, I'm a little puzzled by the angle you're taking. Where was the religious left, and you dove right into violence and the religious left, and you speak as if you would have condoned acts of violence committed by them.
No, I'm pointing out that Jesus could have been more violent, but he wasn't. He wasn't there. He didn't come there to kill the money changers.
Okay, so you're making a religious argument. I'm trying to figure out where you're going with it.
Well, I'm wondering, where are the Berrigan brothers? Where are Phil and the late Phil and Daniel Berrigan? I'm wondering where all the
Is that your beeping?
No, that's not me beeping.
Okay.
So I'm just pointing out that a lot of the insurrectionists would claim to be Christian, but they were nothing but haters and had murder on their minds. And that's why I wonder, where are the Phil Berrigans and the Daniel Berrigans and all the priests in South America who were murdered by death squads for trying to protect the environment and people's rights, indigenous rights in various countries? So I'm speaking of the liberation theologists. Where are the American representations of that?
Okay, it's a little off topic.
I apologize.
We talking about a specific event that had occurred last year. We trying to decipher it 1 year down the road, and whether we have something to learn from the events of last year. Mm-hmm. But thanks for calling and contributing. Thank you. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Trees, how's it going?
Okay, how are you doing?
All right, I heard my name being called, so I left my number with the engineer.
Good for you. That's exactly what you were supposed to do. Thank you.
Yeah, I know, and now you put more on my plate. I wish I would have taken the blue pill because, you know, this work of, this work is very daunting, but, you know, it's necessary, as well as doing other things, also providing for a family as well. It's, not easy, but, you know, I wish I would have taken the blue pill and just, you know, ignored everything and just went to work and watch Netflix all day, but
that's what the former president used to do.
But as far as the January 6th, people label it insurrection, people label it protests, whatever you want to label it. I often look at the events that led up to it, starting with, and there is a conversation out there of a recording of Donald Trump talking to the, and I can't think of his name right now, but he was the attorney general to Georgia, asking him to find 12,000 votes. Now, at that point right there, Donald Trump is involved in voter, you know, it, I mean, for me, that sounds like voter fraud to me.
Sounds so, like it to me.
Exactly. And so I don't understand, like, when some people call your show talking about, you know, there was no evidence of voter fraud. There was evidence of voter fraud, but not on the side that you think. So when you got the president of the United States calling an attorney general of a state to say, find me 12,000 votes, is that not a criminal act? And so nothing happens there. And then you have these right-wing groups like the Proud Boys forming various online groups. Also, too, I know this was in the local papers in D.C., but there were various protests, and some of them became violent during that month of December of last year, where they were confronting the police. And then this all leads up to the January 6th incident, which I feel, and this is just my theory, I feel that they were basically, you know, the law enforcement community was told to stand down on this. They've had enough evidence and enough information to have enough people at that rally. What is it called? Fight for the, you know, fight against the election fraud or whatever it is. They had enough information to supply themselves with enough cops, with enough troops to not let that happen. But for me, I think there was an order to stand down that day.
Well, as you think about it, they were weighing what was more dangerous to do. Would it have been even more dangerous to engage these people, attempting to arrest them and charge them with crimes and so forth, and then all hell will break loose, as opposed to attempting to contain the action and activity? At least that would kind of temper things a bit. But if they had attempted to arrest people wholesale, you know, like they might have at any other major protest event, all hell might have broken loose. There was also, at the time, People didn't know what kinds of weapons were there. There was later report there was a truck loaded with weapons that was parked strategically on the campus. But, of course, nothing happened. We know that now. But you never know in this situation itself how things might have turned out. It might have accelerated or exploded, and then you definitely would have gotten things out of hand.
Well, you know, Eutrice, and before I go, I want to say this, because when you're talking about the weapons, and I was listening to our favorite historian, Dr. Gerald Horn, yesterday about, you know, he was talking about this. And this is why Dr. Horn is so dope. Like, he made, when this was going on, he was making a list of things that he was talking about, with, you know, people were talking about, of the things that the protesters brought to that whole particular incident. And he was talking about they had scanners, they had fireworks, they had all kind of things. Now, there weren't, you know, many armed weapons on the protesters or whoever, you know, what you would call it. But these are still considered weapons if you want to look at it at a different perspective. So when he talks about, you know, they didn't bring any weapons, people think of firearms. Firearms aren't the only weapons that you can use in an insurrection. So, you know, for me, that's still deadly weapons when you're talking about tools, you're talking about hoses, you're talking about all kind of stuff that you can bring. And it's
you're
not
talking about flags. They even use flags.
Exactly. Flags and everything. So, yeah, so, you know, that it's ludicrous to say that, you know, it was an unarmed protest. Man, get out of here.
Get out of here. Thank you, Henry, for your call. And thanks for calling our link. You'll hear from me soon. Thank you. Jeremiah from Harlem, you're on the air.
How's it going today, Eutrice?
It's going.
Well, good. I heard you mention my name, and I immediately called in, and I wrapped up my Blitz chess game that I was playing while I was listening.
Oh.
And I, of course, left my number with the
great
front. And, I'm going to try to be really cautious with my comments right now, because I don't want the FBI knocking on my door when I hang up the phone with you. But I think that people have a right to put their government in fear, basically. I think people do have a right to rebel. And I think these are really sort of delicate, difficult conversations, philosophically speaking, as we start to unpack certain things. Like, for example, and I'll say first of all that I don't identify with those protesters at all. I consider the whole thing to be just a big mess, and people who have wrong political ideas and a distasteful political vision of the world, if I were to lump them all together. But I think that it was just a big melee and a spectacle. I think there's some other alternative footage from the event that just shows people just sort of lounging around. I don't really accept the language of insurrection because, you know, like your first caller, Neil, I believe his name was, said, oh, well, they had murder on their minds. But, you know, a few people got killed. I forget what the total number of people was. He got killed at 3 people or 5 people. It was a dangerous, deadly event that day. And I think a lot of what happened in terms of death was, again, in terms of excessive force from police and police misconduct. I mean, I don't know off the top of my head the number of instances that were fatal and all the details of those instances. But I think it showed once again that the security apparatus of this country, in every respect, is just security theater. I think if those were insurrectionists, they could have killed a bunch of Congress people. I mean, they showed that ridiculous footage of the one security guard with his little baton just sort of running away from a large group. I mean, the fact of the matter is, if they were the murderous people that Neil was describing, I mean, they could have just beaten that man to death and stormed in and proceeded to kill Congress people and so on. But they didn't, thankfully. And I think that's the thing that keeps us more safe than anything in society. It's not all these security techniques and their technology and their surveillance. The main thing that keeps us safe, in my observation and vast traveling around the world, is most people just aren't stark raving psychopaths. And some people are, unfortunately. But like, I used to work before I lost my job due to vaccine mandates right near City Hall downtown in New York City here. And, you know, I used to just think of how vulnerable it was. I mean, if there was really just any number of terrorist elements, I mean, anyone could just toss a grenade into the window. And how come that would never happened? Not because of any great security method. It's because most people aren't stark raving lunatics who are honestly prepared to give up their lives for whatever crazy ideas they have in their heads. So, you know, I think people, like, if we take what happened with the Black Lives Matter protests, it was burning, it was looting. I mean, right here on 34th Street, I found it amazing that the police pretty much just allowed people, from what I understand, to just storm right into Macy's, and people just openly looting Macy's. And, you know, what if those people instead went to the White House? And what would be our attitude then if it was a political movement that expressed some ideas that we identify with as a listening audience in this case? So, you know, I don't consider it an insurrection. I think people get very loose with this kind of terminology, like the usage of the word terrorism, for example. Now people are saying, oh, if you're an anti-vaxxer, that's equal to terrorism. The CEO of Pfizer said, people who make statements against our vaccines are murderers at this point. So jeez. I think we should just be a little bit cautious with some of this language. I found the whole thing to be very clumsy and messy. And, you know, I think what's one thing that's fascinating about the Trump movement is I think he mobilized a bunch of people who are largely in that space for totally different reasons. I don't think they're a unified body at all. I think there's some people who identify with Trump's racism and some people who would deny that he was a racist altogether. Say, oh, it's not about that. It's about these economic principles or whatever. There's all kinds of people who occupy that space that we call Trump supporters. I've come to realize over all these years, they have all these different wacky and different ideas. They're not as the media portrays them to be necessarily, which is something else I think we should be cautious about, which is, you know, what are our images? What, unless we were there at that event to witness it firsthand or conducted some real interviews with people who were there, we have to realize we're getting a nice little, you know, jamboree of imagery that the media again gets to play with and project certain ideas onto the unknowing, unsuspecting public. So
thanks.
Those are my comments.
Thanks for your observations and your input today. I really was listening to what you had to say, and some ideas were coming into my head, which I had to stifle for fear that I would take over your point. So,
I'd love to hear your response.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
We'll take this break and come back. Ali joins us next after the break. But let's take a little break here. Some more Blind Boys. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Utrice Lead. And we're trying to make sense 1 year down the road from the great so-called protest in Washington, D.C. on the 6th, and we're trying to make sense of what it is we saw or heard or experienced directly. Ali from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. Happy New Year, and Happy New Year to all your listeners.
Thank you. Feliz Año Nuevo.
That's right. Felicidades. Yeah. So I hope that is last year was a terrible year for me. So I hope it's a better year this year. But We just have to move on. Yes.
I love that spirit. Move on. Move ahead.
Yes, that's right. From that list that you have, I was surprised not to hear the name of Marcus from Wisconsin. I think he's an excellent, when he calls, he makes a lot of good points where most of the time I agree with. So I hope that he calls and he makes a presentation because I think he's really, really good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. And to your question, which I didn't hear the question, but I know that we're talking about the insurrection for January 6th of last year, and today is the year anniversary. I just wanted to let all these people here in New York City that people are going to gather at Union Square around 6:30 this evening. I'm probably going to try to make it. I'm probably going to be there. I don't know who called for this, but it's going to be over 200 cities. They're going to be have some gathering, some protests, or some rally, or whatever it is. So I'm going to be at Union Square this evening. So I just want to put that out there for everyone.
You are right in one respect. You continue. You just, despite having a rough year, you keep on moving.
You know what? As long as you are alive, your body has to keep moving. You have to move. You can't stop.
You can't.
Only when we are in the casket, we can't move. So as long as you know we are alive, we have to do it. I just wanted to say something about this assault to the Capitol or insurrection, whatever you wanted to say. You know, when Letitia James won to be the Attorney General of the state of New York, a lot of people here in the big city, in the Big Apple, they have this hype that, oh, she's going to do something, or she's going to be doing this. I know that she's going to charge him. You know what? We're sitting down, and this time we're not moving, and we're still waiting for Ms. James to do something against this guy in New York City, Trump. I just don't see that Trump going to be charged with any crime, not here in the state of New York and not in D.C. They could bring all the proof that they have, and I don't think anything really will happen because they have so many proof, one after the other, of all what these men have done, including raping an underage girl, which then she took out, that is the word here, before he won, that the girl took the case out of court because she was afraid. And some of the other women that he even, it came out from his own mouth that he used to touch women, and you know the whole story about this. So,
but you know, you need to say the word, very important, allegedly.
Allegedly, yes. Yes, I would have to say that. Yes, thank you for reminding me of that. Yeah, so you know, some other men, allegedly, they have been, and they have lost their governorship, they have lost their job, and they haven't been charged. And another thing is allegedly, and they have lost all, you know, the professional job. So, but this guy, he moved on, and you are 100% right, you trees. This man acts like he's still depressed between him and Manchin and this woman, Sinema, from Arizona, I think she is. These three people, I don't think Biden is the president. These three people, they act like they're the presidents of the United States. And especially Trump and the space that they have given him, and you always talk about this, it's like no one is really bringing out the mental capacity of this guy and also the way that he's out there sending venom, I mean, really, really a racist statement, and he's still out there. And I would say this. I'm actually thinking about if he wins in 2024, I'm not sure that I'm going to be a permanent resident of this nation because it's not that I'm afraid, but I'm concerned. I'm concerned about all this wall, all these different laws that they set up that we, as people of color, we're not going to be able to move around in this country. I mean, you take a look at what happened in Washington, D.C. These people, they were armed. And I do have to disagree with Jeremiah. He should go to PBS and look at Frontline. Somebody, if you listened to the documentary that it was done about January the 6th, you will change your mind. And another thing that he talked about was about the looting from Black Lives Matter. How do you know that you're always going to find people that they take advantage of situations? Because it's a fact. And then you also have people infiltrating. I saw what happened at 34th Street at Macy's, that they have all boarded off the whole store, and they brought this guy out to arrest him because he was inside the store. And I'm just like, really? So we have to be aware of what is happening out there. I don't think this event today is going to do really anything because we really don't have that much power. Yes, it's people power, but as long as we don't have a million people out on the street, I don't think we're going to be able to accomplish what we need to accomplish. And he will be back. But it's not only in him that is the problem. It's when the Republican, and I'm going to tell you, I'm not even voting for Democrats, but when these people, they take the House of Representatives, the Senate, and then Trump comes back, oh, my God, all the hell, we have to be very, very concerned of what is going to happen to this country. And my last thing is what Chris just said. He's going to come back, and he's going to leave this country the way that he left those places in those casinos in Atlantic City, destroyed, completely destroyed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ali, for your comments today. Wayne from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Wayne.
Oh, I thought, well, good afternoon. And
good afternoon. You sound very muffled. Can't hear you too well. Your phone connection is very weak.
Yes, I know. Let's see if I can fix that now. Any better?
Yes.
Okay. What we saw last year was a coup attempt. Nobody addressing it as a coup attempt. So that these people involved, especially the planners and co-conspirators, should be charged.
Oh, you're fading, Wayne.
Huh?
I don't know what is wrong with your phone, but you sound like you have a whole bunch of things over your phone, and we can't hear you clearly.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, finally.
All right. Okay. I said on the 6th, what happened last year, we saw a coup attempt against the country. These people that were involved, planners and co-conspirators, should all be charged with treason. In any other country, they would have been clamoring for that, or they would have been up waving flags and supporting that group, well, if they wasn't in government anyway. But this was a coup attempt. And regardless of how we try to paint it, it just wouldn't hold. Now, when you think about not talking bad about a president, we should talk bad. Freedom of speech is just that, freedom of speech. And these guys, Carter was the one who chaired the conference, the Worldwide Leadership Conference, that decided that there were too many black people, black and brown people in the world, and they came up with the Global Policy 2000. We keep forgetting these things. We don't like to link them, or we don't pay attention. This global policy, they decided that the black and brown populations of the world was exploding while the white was dying. So they had to find any and every means necessary to turn that around. COVID is just the latest attack. COVID is the flu virus weaponized. But we go along with these games. We act the same foolish way that they want us to act.
and we lose touch with reality. This is why we're so easily manipulated. So now, in the brains, we are talking about Trump coming back. Are we serious? A lot of stuff that happened during Trump time, I applaud him for, because a lot of things were exposed that needed to be exposed. But Trump's action was not that of a man that you would put in office again anywhere.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you,
YouTube. Thanks for contributing today. Thank you, Wayne,
okay,
for your call.
All right, bye.
Gwen from New York. You're bringing up the rear today, Gwen.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Okay.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm driving, but I just had to make this point on the last caller that, you know, when you think about the people always say that Trump made a difference. He brought us things that weren't.
Okay. I spoke too soon. You're not sounding too good.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
I can, but we're also competing with outside noise. So
okay,
is it possible that you can pull over wherever you are and be stationary to make your call?
Okay. Okay. So here I'm going to do this. Okay. I just wanted to say that I heard the last caller, and I heard all the callers, and one of the things that people keep saying is that, you know, Trump, you know, was a real leader. He brought up things that other people weren't bringing up. And it brought into my mind, you know, Bobby Kennedy. To me, he's a person who's actually really bringing up things that are not getting brought up by anybody else. I mean, this man is completely suppressed. Everywhere he turns, he's suppressed. And yet, the front cover of his new book is Fauci. And he goes right after this guy, fearlessly. Now, I can't say that I think Trump ever did anything fearlessly or for any other motivation other than himself. If he brought something up, it's because it was going to benefit him. For example, right now, he is saying that he supports the vaccine. Many people in his group do not support the mandatory vaccine, but Trump is saying that he supports it, not mandatorily, but he says he's supporting it. And that's because he's running for office right now. And you know, I had a friend the other day who absolutely loves this guy who said to me, you know, I'm not going to vote for him again, and I can't believe it. I said, are you kidding me? I said, the guy is a complete opportunist, every which way he turns. What I don't understand is how can you not see this? They say people see things very differently. You know, even when we visually look at things, we absolutely see things differently. But to me, Trump is so easy to see through. There is no problem at seeing that Trump is a shyster. He's just a mafioso guy with orange hair that has a huge ego that wanted more power. And you gave it to him. And, you know, everybody that voted for him should not be surprised at what they got. You got a guy who's an opportunist. Whatever is going to work for him is going to work for him. Now, as far as this insurrection last year when it happened, I have to say I was really terrified watching it. And I don't think we should underestimate it either, because I do think that although there was violence there, not as much as we could have been, I still think that we shouldn't underestimate people and their boiling point. And one thing it did show us that people are at a boiling point, now many for different reasons. I know myself that this year my perspective is different. And I wonder if we'll ever see a left that is willing to get up and show that kind of righteous indignation as we see on the right. But I also want to say this, too. Everybody needs to be double looking at this, the way we separate ourselves. And we go right into, I'm left, you're right, now let's play ball, let's go after each other and clobber each other. But I'm finding now with the vaccine and the vaccine mandate that the waters have become very muddy for me. And although I'm not a Trump supporter, I can't believe that when I never go on Facebook and jab my finger in somebody's eye and tell them that, yeah, this is the way it is. I don't do that. But I had a conversation with somebody yesterday that, you know, I was just putting into the conversation, yeah, but I'm not sure because there have been a lot of deaths by the vaccine. And you should have seen the pileup on me. I mean, you just should have seen the pileup and the viciousness and wishing I was dead. And I couldn't believe these are the same people that I was at the anti-Trump march with last year. Last year there was an anti-Trump rally where my parents live, and there I was out there with my signs and protesting, and I was shocked to see how quickly people will turn and the meanness of the things they said. I mean, it is true I'm not a doctor, but I certainly am well read on the subject, and neither were these other people that were shunning me. So now I wonder what's it going to take for people to get together and actually show a little fist up in the air. Maybe, you know, I mean, I do think that this world is being controlled by a few powers that be, and our local government is becoming less and less, it's less and less relevant. Your government right now is not relevant. It doesn't really matter because we're in a world package. And it seems like everybody's still caught on, you know, these issues that keep us bickering with each other. When we have a huge problem here. We have a huge problem here. We've got a vaccine that's gone worldwide. We don't know how many people potentially it's going to kill. We don't know how they're going to use the mandate. And it's happening in all countries, and it's a coordinated effort. So I think that is the pie in the sky that we got to keep our eye on. And that as far as these other skirmishes, and that's what they really are, they don't carry the weight that they once did. And we're losing time by not focusing on this issue. It isn't so much even the vaccine. It's the idea that a small cabal of people thought that they could get away with this caper on the entire world. And so far, they have. And they have when I listen to people that I thought were of like mind on the left. And in fact, when I listen to them speak to me, they sound fascistic. And now I wonder about whether we need the courage to actually go and at some point, you know, have the kind of courage that the so-called right wing showed last year. I wasn't with them. I didn't like what they did. I'm anti-violence, but I also don't like the idea of somebody, you know, locking me up in a camp and saying, sorry, you can't come back to civilization unless we get to shoot this crap in you, and you don't know what it is. Well, I know a little bit about what it is. So I just wanted to put that on the table as well today.
What would you say emerged for you as the most important learning point of last year?
Propaganda and how it gets driven. And I watched it last two nights ago, too, when I saw the timing of the PBS film about the insurgents and the insurrection. And then I heard it again the next day on Democracy Now! And, yes, I do take it seriously. But I also see how we're all being manipulated and driven into our corners of this is the right and this is the left. And guess what? I keep finding out when I talk, the more you talk to people, the more I find out that, you know, we're not so far away from each other. But it works wonderfully for the powers that be that are running the world government, that we stay in our corners, that we identify ourselves as left or right, and that you're all bad and you're all good. Guess what? The older I get, the more I realize you can't paint with such a broad paintbrush. There are things that are in the middle. And although I might not, you know, support anybody on, you know, issues of you taking away a right for me to make choices with my body or things like that, I will still stand with somebody else and say, you don't have a right as a government to come to my house and take me away and make me take a vaccine into my body that I don't want to. And if somebody's on, a Republican that's saying the same thing as me on this particular issue, I'm going to get next to them on this issue. So I might not be with you on all topics or all issues, but this is a huge issue. And we really, really cannot just say, we can't keep pushing this train along acting like it's going to solve itself. It's not going to solve itself. It's going to keep going and spiraling down, and more people are going to get caught up in it. And then it's going to go to the next thing. And so, you know, when we talk about difference makers, I have to categorically say I don't think Trump was a difference maker. But I do think people like Bobby Kennedy, I think they are courageous and they are difference makers.
Well, thank you. Thank you for also bringing our program to a very significant end with your words of wisdom and advice. Thank you very much, Gwen, for your participation today. And that brings us to the end of our program. Thank you, those of you who called and left your numbers. You'll be hearing from me. And just stay well. and pay attention to what is going on. There's something big happening, and just don't miss it. Keep at it. Keep tabs on where things are going. It will eventually show itself, but don't keep your eyes off of it at all. Thanks. We'll talk again tomorrow. Bye-bye.